Hello and welcome. This is the final time we'll be spending this part of Saturday mornings together. On this morning's show, we look back on our 10 seasons on the air, during which we've been privileged to bear witness to and report on a period of historic growth in both the scale and quality of music, the fine arts, theatre and dance, as well as a wealth of other cultural activities. So, on this morning's programme, a decade of Creatively Speaking.
Music is a byproduct of humans.
Well, actually, Yo-Yo and I never look at each other because he sits behind me.
I've just written a new cycle for Renee Fleming. I know that a very great singer will sing it.
Insofar as an artist can come on stage and touch and move the audience, I hope I'm a diva. But the rest of it, I think, can stay firmly in some other place.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.
Hello and welcome to the last episode of this show. Today we look back over 9 years of Creatively Speaking. Alongside me, David Patrick Stearns, Eric Brannan and Susan Lewis.
This morning we'll share with you some memories of the show.
Almost a decade of Saturdays, there's no way to cover it all.
Here's just a sampling of our favorites and some reflections.
Good morning. I hope we find you well on this lovely autumn day. This is Jim Cotter welcoming you to Creatively Speaking, which, as we hope you know, is... The show started rather inauspiciously on a Saturday in October of 2003 with a recently arrived Irish immigrant.
Inauspicious? Is he talking about himself?
No, wait a minute. I'm Irish, too.
Wait, I'm a quarter Irish.
everybody let him talk.
Yes, oh, it yes. was me, trying desperately to get a grasp of the quality and quantity of the performing and fine arts in the Philadelphia region. What soon became apparent was that Philadelphia was, and is, even more so today, a company town. And that company is arts and culture.
Creatively Speaking came into being as the Philadelphia Orchestra and other resident companies were settling into their new home at the Kimmel Center, the same year that the National Constitution Center opened on Independence Mall. Over the past 10 years, other venues for the arts have been created and expanded. The Philadelphia Museum of Art stretched its footprint across Pennsylvania Avenue to the Perlman Building, the move presided over by longtime director, our friend, the late Anne Darnincourt, who died suddenly in 2008.
The great collections of prints, drawings, and photographs, the costume and textiles, all of these great collections couldn't expand in the main museum. They could have fabulous homes and galleries here.
More recently, the Curtis Institute of Music opened its state-of-the-art Lenfest Hall, complete with recording capabilities, teaching studios, and for the first time, living quarters for students.
Then fourth-year student and bass trombone player Nathan Lodge told us about the benefits of the new Lenfest Hall, while percussion student Ted Babcock reflected on moving up in the world.
The percussion facilities used to be in the basement. These new facilities are just spectacular. It's completely soundproofed and a ton of space, so we finally have enough space.
I look on the schedule every day to see when there's a rehearsal, and if there's not and it's available, I like to practice here because it's awesome. It's really resonant, and you can really hear your sound.
The Lenfest were also instrumental in connecting the historic Frank Furness building of the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts to the Academy's newer Hamilton building by the pedestrian-friendly Lenfest Plaza. Also the site of a new sculpture by internationally renowned artist Klaus Oldenburg.
Form is a very important thing, and even though I give it a name, such as paintbrush, that doesn't mean that that's all it's about. It's not just an object. This is an object which does become transformed by its circumstances, by its materials, and by my imagination.
Across the street from PAFA is the newly expanded Pennsylvania Convention Center. Up the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, next door to the newly renovated Rodin Museum, is the new Barnes Foundation, which, after much rancor, this year finally made its move to its new home. Barnes board member and philanthropist Joan Neubauer.
And the collection, again, reflects in much better light than it did before. It's very interesting. When Ellsworth Kelly was here, he just couldn't believe his eyes. And he stopped in front of a Picasso, the boy with the goat figure, and he said, "Wow, you cleaned it all up." And we said, no, we didn't clean it all up. We just changed the lighting. And that's the real impression that one gets. It looks better. Particularly La Danse and The Joy of Life are really spectacular.
During Creatively Speaking's 9 years on the air, these and other Philadelphia institutions have presented multiples of memorable performances and exhibitions of great art and culture. performances of opera abounded on stages around the city. Curtis Opera Theater, the Academy of Vocal Arts, and the Opera Company of Philadelphia, which, among several innovations, gave the U.S. premiere of the Hans Werner Henze opera, Phaedra, co-commissioned and premiered works by Nico Muhly, Dark Sisters, and the Richard Daniel Poor, Toni Morrison opera, Margaret Garner, a wrenching story about slavery in America. Soprano Angela Brown.
It's just something that has to be dealt with and looked at. And until we do that, we can't all totally be free from the past or be totally free in our present.
Voices were also raised in choral ensembles, including the Philadelphia Singers, the Choral Arts Society, the Mendelssohn Club, and the Crossing, among others.
We leapt into the world of dance with features on a variety of distinctive companies, including Ballet X, Gene Ruddy, and Philadanko. At Pennsylvania Ballet, choreographer Christopher Wheeldon spoke with us about his new production of Swan Lake, which was later to be a huge success when the company took it to the Edinburgh International Festival.
I suppose this is how you measure the quality of a ballet company with a ballet like Swan Lake, because it involves great technical demands, a certain amount of theatricality from the performers. It's sort of the grand sparkling tiara of ballet.
We got to know the breadth and variety of the musical groups that enriched the region, from small ensembles like Perforo, Tempeste di Mare, and Dolce Suono, to grand ones like the Philadelphia Orchestra. Despite the orchestra's bout with bankruptcy, which made international headlines, it has maintained, even topped, its extraordinary level of musical excellence. Among highlights over the years was its five-season Mahler cycle, led by then-music director Christoph Eschenbach. The orchestra even built a special percussion instrument played by Chris Devinny for Mahler's sixth.
He's a little bit nondescript, really. In my part, it says hammer. That's all it says. Gross hammer, large hammer. But ultimately, he wants it to be kind of a shot to the stomach.
You ready?
Another resident of the Kimball Center, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia, continued to expand its repertoire and its concert offerings. In 2006, we spoke to then-music director Ignat Solzhenitsyn about his father, the iconic writer and dissident who would pass in 2008.
I think it's probably unfair to compare anyone to my father when it comes to that kind of physical and moral courage that he displayed. Very few people are like that to start with, have that in them.
Over the past 9-plus years, 10 seasons, we've gone behind the curtain in countless theatrical productions staged by the Arden, the Wilma, the Philadelphia Theater Company, and the many other theaters. Reporter Jason Pfeiffer asked actor Alan Stanford what everyone wants to know when they see Samuel Beckett's existential masterpiece about waiting.
Who are Estragon and Vladimir? Where exactly are they? Why are they waiting for Godot? And who is this Godot?
Beckett most decidedly and absolutely doesn't say who he is. The only thing he insists on is that it's pronounced Godot. And he said, with a twinkle in his eye and a wink at the questioner, because it sort of sounds like God. But he doesn't mean that it is. He doesn't mean that it isn't. Because what you're waiting for is what you are waiting for.
Our visits to the Penn Museum helped us see the world in a new way, whether exploring the great continent of Africa, secrets of the Silk Road, or discovering what really happened to Pennsylvania's Lenape people, believed by most to have been driven westward in the 1700s and 1800s. In fact, many hid in plain sight. exhibition co-curator Chief Bob Redhawk Ruth of the Lenape Nation.
Whether it was intermarriage, whether it was hiding who you are, you did whatever you could. If you could pass as a white or even as African-American, and this is even during segregation times, we were low men on the totem pole.
Over the last decade, we've visited the Philadelphia Museum of Art for dozens of exhibitions, from centuries-old treasures of Latin America to major retrospectives of Dalí, Degas, and Renoir, from Duchamp and Calder to Cézanne and beyond. The museum's Joe Rischel said Cézanne distinguished himself from his Impressionist contemporaries.
If the Monet is the leaf, the wind picks up the leaf and catches the light, that's what he tells you about. Nothing ever moves in Cézanne. If you see a duck in the water in Cézanne, which you will only occasionally, that duck is stuck there for life.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts also presented numerous exhibitions celebrating American artists from the history books, as well as those creating and collecting art today. PAFA was selected as the Pennsylvania Museum to display works from the unlikely art-collecting couple Herb and Dorothy Vogel when they were distributing 50 works to each of 50 states. He had been a postal worker, she a reference librarian. But over 45 years, they had collected more than 4,000 works of contemporary art. We met with them in 2010 as they were giving away much of their collection. Herb died in July of this year.
Dorothy doesn't disagree with what I like, or I don't disagree with what she likes.
Our sensibilities were very comparable. He would go more for the flamboyant, and I go more for the hard edge, the more cerebral. But I think that our sensibilities did blend.
During our tenure, four artistic leaders have shaped and reshaped the Philadelphia Orchestra: Wolfgang Sawallisch, Christoph Eschenbach, Charles Dutoit, and Yannick Nézet-Séguin. We were even there to greet Yannick at the airport on his very first visit to Philadelphia, when he arrived exhausted for his first rehearsal, delayed due to snow and illness.
American Airlines baggage representative, please come to the baggage claim area in Terminal A East.
Excuse me, Yannick.
Yes?
David Stearns?
You're here.
Yes, I am.
You survived.
Come here, I want to show you something.
I walk him over to a lighted sign that hangs over the security checkpoint entrance, showing the Kimmel Center, where he will conduct.
That's where you're going.
That's great. Okay, that cheers me up.
Yeah, have you been there?
No, actually.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay, well.
Philadelphia has hosted top stars from every artistic field, many of whom were guests on the program, from classical music and opera and jazz. Among them, Luciano Pavarotti, Yo-Yo Ma, Simon Rattle, and Tony Bennett.
Right next to the Academy of Music is a parking lot. So Basie was there just smoking a cigarette, and I came over and I just started chatting with him. And some white guy came over to him. He said, "Get my car." And Count Basie said, "I've been parking cars all night. You're going to have to get your own car that quick."
The legendary choreographer Paul Taylor talked to us about how his love for swimming informed his dance.
I remembered how it felt to push through water, to use water, use the eddies and the currents and the backwash and everything as a swimmer. So when I started dancing, I loved that feeling, and a lot of my movement, particularly if it was slow movement, I pressed through.
In the theater world, we spoke with many actors, directors, backroom staff, and of course, playwrights, including giants in the field: Tom Stoppard, David Mamet, Terrence McNally, and Edward Albee.
I try to write with sufficient precision that I make it difficult for people to screw up. You see, there is the creative act and the interpretive act. The play is the creative act. The string quartet is the creative act. The string quartet that plays the string quartet doesn't go around changing the notes or changing the order of the notes. They play what's down there. And in a play, if the play is any good, that's what should happen too.
Among those we talked to from the world of fine art, June Kaneko, Frank Stella, and Jamie Wyeth, who after the death of his father, Andrew, spoke about his family's creative legacy.
You know, the wonderful thing about a painter is that when a painter dies, they never really die. They leave their work, because there he still is in the walls. I mean, he lives in his work, and And that, to me, is limitless, you know. So the finality of it probably really hasn't hit me. Obviously, I miss him as a person, but his, you know, the blur between he and his work is such a blur that it's very hard to make the distinction.
Philadelphia, too, has bred its own master painters. Among them, Beau Bartlett, Elizabeth Osborne, and the late Thomas Chimes, who died in 2009.
He explained his artistic philosophy of pataphysics.
I lived my life, although absolutely committed to being an artist, in such a way that I had a lot of different experiences. And pataphysically speaking, that's what a pataphysician does. He participates in the world and all that goes on there, but he's the one that understands what that world's really about. And the notion of absurdity is right there.
Another recent subject of a major retrospective at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Zoe Strauss, was on Creatively Speaking when she self-curated a 2005 exhibition in a much less auspicious site, Wasteland under Interstate 95.
There's great beauty in places, I think, that you wouldn't ordinarily look for it. But there's also great desperation, and it's everything. It's the whole thing. It's both beauty and anxiety and the in-between.
We talked to a number of the region's many prolific composers, including George Crumb, Ned Roram, and Jennifer Higdon, who spoke to us after just claiming a Pulitzer and a Grammy in the same day.
Yeah, it is an exceptional 24 hours. Most people think when you win a Grammy that you get it immediately, but I had to go down to a Federal Express warehouse and pick it up. So it was a pretty cool thing to tell the receptionist there, oh, this is my Grammy. Her eyes about popped out of her head.
We profiled legendary percussionist Alan Abel, who not only played for nearly 40 years as a member of the Philadelphia Orchestra, he invented a suspended drum stand now used in orchestras all over the world.
And it was terrific. As a matter of fact, that first drum, we recorded the Symphony Fantastique of Berlioz, and there's a big bass drum part. And we went to New York to do it in a ballroom setting, and that drum would just move up and down, and if you listen carefully in that recording, you could hear it, wow, wow, wow.
We've also profiled those who would go on to become international stars. Hilary Hahn, Yuja Wang, Eileen Perez, Stephen Costello, and Long Long, who came to Philadelphia at 14 and returned to China, an international sensation.
The first ever back for me is with the Philadelphia Orchestra, my hometown orchestra now, and with Maestro Savalas as the orchestra's 100th birthday tour. So we played in the Beijing Great Hall of People. And like 10,000 people were there. I mean, I saw many audiences with tears, and it was so emotional.
We've reported from high above the city, nearly 600 feet in the air, at the top of William Penn's hat on City Hall.
And we can pop the top off so you can see how he's built in sections. There's 47 sections of castings that are flange bolted together on the inside. So then they could put them up here. They couldn't put them up here in one piece.
Not too afraid of heights, we've also climbed to the top of bell towers to learn about the carillon, sets of enormous bells hooked up to a console played with vigor by an actual person. Carilloner Lisa Loney let us in on the private world of this most public musical instrument.
I'm above the tree line. It's just being inside your instrument that you play. I think it's kind of heavenly. I don't know. It's really great. I like it a lot.
We've also gone to the depths. Stories in a hotel swimming pool, a crypt in Laurel Hill Cemetery, and a cell in Eastern State Penitentiary. We hit the historic spots from Independence Mall to the Waterworks, but also discovered cultural treasures away from the well-worn tourist paths and the bright lights of Broad Street.
On a quiet street not far from Rittenhouse Square sits the Rosenbach Museum and Library. In 2006, then Associate Director Mike Barsanti took us through the late Rosenbach Brothers townhouse, where their eclectic collection of rare books, manuscripts, furnishings, Even a death mask of James Joyce lives on.
That's sort of a haunted house that way. We have the brothers hovering around. They were both very smart, educated people. But they like to take some of the world's great treasures and they like to have fun with them. And that's what we like to do here.
Philadelphia is a place where arts of all sorts are collected, created, and cultivated in one-time homes, warehouses, and storefronts. And we visited many of them.
There's the Wood Turning Center, the Fabric Workshop, Clay Studio, the Plastic Club, and the Sketch Club.
Places filled with creative quirkiness. The Doll Museum, the Stoogeum, the Dental Museum, even a shoe museum.
Historic Reading Terminal bustles with vendors, shoppers, and ordinary people, like one of the many who just loves to play that old piano that sits in the middle of the market.
I gave it that tropical Jamaican feel.
Good.
Yeah. Kind of bounce off on you. Yeah, I bounce on you. Kind of bounce on you. You hear it and you want to, you know. I saw people walking and sometimes they kind of walk to the music.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, because of the rhythm. Yeah.
So obviously the money isn't great.
No, the money is not great. I do this for the love of it.
Yeah. We've celebrated birthdays and anniversaries, among them Benjamin Franklin's 300th.
A Renaissance man for his time, I would say. He was a scientist, a writer, a politician. So he wore many hats.
The kite and the key, that's it. That's all you learn.
A very honorable guy. Just because how he made that list to daily better himself by putting all his vices on it and trying not to do those vices.
You think of Ben Franklin, you think it's the greatest city in the world, Philadelphia. Cheese steaks, everything.
The Academy of Natural Sciences at 200 and the Academy of Music at 150.
I've been here 34 years. Many of our ushers have been here 30 years. Some of them have married, and now their children are also ushers right alongside of them. If you're here 20 years, you're the baby of the group.
My first ballet was there watching Margot Fonteyn in Swan Lake.
Everybody just has such fond memories of this beautiful building.
Settlement Music School's celebration of its centennial brought back a surprising mix of alumni, including Twister, Chubby Checker, composer Michael Bacon, and Star Wars director, the late Irvin Kershner, all of whom reflected on the value of music in general and settlement in particular.
I consider film as music because it's rhythmic, it has repeats, it has melodic lines, it has movements.
So settlement to me always was a relaxed, fun place to be, which is what you really need to provide for children with music.
Little did I know back then that the things that I learned there, I'd be using in my music career far beyond my expectations.
The Free Library of Philadelphia celebrated the bicentennial of Charles Dickens. Actor Gerald Charles Dickens read from his great-great-grandfather's observations about the city of Philadelphia.
It is a handsome city, but distractingly regular. After walking about it for an hour or two, I felt that I would have given the world for a crooked street.
Philadelphia loves a good party, and festivals have popped up like wildflowers. There's Welcome America, the Live Arts in Philly Fringe, Month of Moderns, Hidden Cities, Philadelphia Film Festival, and First Person Arts, which began in 2000 and gave birth to the annual Story Slams. Philographica toasted the city's history in printmaking in 2010. And there's the annual Bach Festival, driven by the passion of people like former artistic director Jonathan Sternberg, now in his 90s.
You can almost touch Bach, I think, when it's performed. It's there to touch, it's there to feel, it's there to absorb, to eat, to hold close to you. And I think to me that's one of the major reasons why we do Bach, to get as many people as possible who don't know of the wonders behind knowing and experiencing Bach.
The Philadelphia International Festival of the Arts, or PIFA, debuted in 2011 as a 25-day festival with 135 events featuring 1,500 artists from a variety of genres. The Art of Paris between 1910 and 1920 provided the theme and the inspiration. PIFA Executive Director Ed Cameron.
We were encouraging our
collaborators to really look at ways in which they could push the envelope to take the spirit of that time and use it as inspiration to try to do new and unusual things today.
We also explored beyond the city, from Atlantic City to Harrisburg, Scranton to Dover, Delaware, and beyond, such as a summer weekend spent down the shore, investigating Cape May's theater and music scene and Wildwood's doo-wop architecture, working hard to bring you the arts wherever they might be found.
Over the years, we've also reported from around the world.
At the Music Hall of Hamburg.
For a flight to Kuala Lumpur.
In the winding brick streets of Utrecht.
In London.
From the Estonian capital of Tallinn.
In Tokyo on a damp, drizzly Sunday evening.
Time and again, whether far away or at home, we saw that the arts can uplift and change lives. The power demonstrated directly by organizations like Art Sanctuary in North Philadelphia, West Philadelphia's Play on Philly, which teaches at-risk children to play in orchestras, and the Village of Arts and Humanities, a neighborhood cluster of after-school arts programs which started with a North Philadelphia park created on an empty lot by artist Lily Yeh.
They all laughed. They say, you're Chinese, you go to that neighborhood. Kids going to destroy everything you build, and $2,500 is a drop in the bucket. It was really a little voice in me said that you have to rise to the occasion, otherwise the best of you will die and the rest amounts to nothing.
We've seen firsthand how music and the arts can reach across boundaries of time, place, race, and economic and other circumstances to tap into the best of what makes us human. Berlin Philharmonic music director Simon Rattle says music tells many stories, but its essence
is joy. It's not always joyful, but it comes from a deep wellspring of joy. I just think it's so important that we are not the high priests of this art form, that we are evangelists and that we go out and tell people that everybody needs this.
And that goes to the heart of what we've tried to do in this show, celebrate the artists and the arts and pass on that joy to you, our listeners. And so the show goes. Thank you to the arts community whose energy and enthusiasm, creativity and commitment humbled and inspired us. But thanks most of all to you for your support, your encouragement, and for the many Saturdays from 2003 till today that you spent with us listening.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.